Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:45 p.m. and today is in Central Time, and today is February 16th. And Nvidia reported earnings about 20 minutes ago, and they were better than expected, but not really a lot better than expected. And then the share was down about 1% in after hours trading. So, as we've seen with lots of the big cloud companies and the leaders in the FangMan sector, Nvidia has been capable of beating expectations, but it's not about expectations any longer, it's about guidance. And guidance has been falling for the majority of companies during this earnings season. So we're coming through the other side of the pandemic and the massive fiscal response. And this is already starting to show up in terms of the performance of stocks. Now, Nvidia has bounced from the region of the trend mean following a deep decline. Now, we had a clear acceleration, but I think investors are probably going to argue this isn't the first time that the share has accelerated. So when we look at it on a log scale chart, then it helps to put that acceleration into perspective. And it accelerated in 2020. And this, of course, has been one of the better performing shares over the last few years. So there have been other occasions on which it accelerated as well. But of course, it's at a much higher level now. So it's still quite a bit overextended relative to the 1,000-day moving average. But what I think is most important is that it holds the recent low around the $200 area. And nothing has really happened to question the cyclicality of the semiconductor sector. Now, of course, Nvidia is very much concentrated on graphics chips. And when we think about the performance of the other companies that are heavily focused on this sector, well, AMD is also steadying, at least in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And then, even though Nvidia doesn't anticipate that they're going to be able to significantly increase supply, Intel has already released its own version of a graphics chip. And I've been bombarded by ads for Intel graphics chips in new laptops because I made the mistake of looking at one on my phone. Well, Intel is still range-bound and has been range-bound for quite some time and is in all likelihood going to stay range bound considering that they're losing the fight to retake their mantle as the global leader in chip manufacturing. And Taiwan Semiconductor is bouncing from the region of the trend mean as well. So we're certainly seeing at least a pause coming through in here. Then when we think about what's happening with gold, we've been through a very lengthy process of consolidation. And gold was up $15 in here today. So now it's time to start thinking about what does a breakout potentially look like. Because the price now is closing out at highs that we haven't seen for a while. We have to go back to June of 2021 before we can see a close up around these levels. So we're potentially now on the cusp of completing what's been a lengthy period of consolidation. Now, as I've said in the past, 18-month consolidations are not unusual for gold, and it's been 18 months. And we did certainly see an acceleration in 2020. So that's also a trend-ending signal. It's not the first time gold's accelerated. A similar acceleration happened in 2011, and the price went sideways for about a year and a half and subsequently broke downwards. Now, we continue to see arguments that the price should be back around the 1650 level. And some of those arguments are very much focused on real rates. When we look at constant maturity swaps, or the constant maturity 10-year yield, it was heavily inverted back in 2020 and really hasn't gone anywhere until quite recently when it broke out. So we still have negative real rates, but they're only negative by 43 basis points. Now, whereas it was in excess of 100 basis points not all that long ago. The negative real interest rate environment was a significant tailwind for gold on the way up in the period from 2019 through to 2020. And when we look at the timing of when gold peaked out, well, then it was around the time when the negative real rates got about as negative as they were going to get. So it's logical then to begin to apply the same logic and to think that if rates or real rates are going to push back up towards potentially positive, well, that should be a headwind for gold. But the problem with it is that this indicator is coincident with strength in gold occasionally, but not all the time. So we can think about the period between 2003 and 2008 when gold did exceptionally well and real rates didn't really not much of anything. And then there was the period between about 2008 and early 2013, but gold peaked in 2011. So then we can also think about the fact that these moves tend to be difficult for gold when we get a big move on the upside. That's what we had, for example, in 2008. We had it again in 2013. So, but they're not timing indicators. So I think there are three different ways of valuing gold. We can think about it as a zero coupon bond, which would be looking at it in terms of real rates. But it doesn't have a maturity. So then it's got very long duration. Well, I guess it's got infinite duration. And that's one of the ways of thinking about gold. But the other way of thinking about gold is as a currency, where there's limited supply. And there are many currencies that have limited supply. So the dollar is beginning to roll over. And it was in negative territory today. But we're still in this range overall. So it looks quite clear that eventually the dollar will roll over. And we just haven't seen a big dynamic move yet. Ultimately, when it comes down to the question of whether governments are going to begin to really address their deficits or they're going to continue to spend beyond their means, well, then geopolitics comes into play, because it's not just about the competition between countries. It's also about the rest of populations within countries and the rise of populism. So when we think about what the likelihood is that suddenly we're going to get a new Tea Party movement stepping in and animating, agitating for balanced budgets, well, it just looks unlikely. And that was one of the causal factors behind the decline in gold in 2011, because you had a strong movement towards balanced budgets, and that's just not apparent right now. So that's one of the other ways of viewing gold. And when we think about gold in various currencies, well, it's appreciating in the majority of currencies. So this is it in US dollars, but I thought it was rather interesting today that when we look at it in Japanese yen, we're right in the region of the peak. Then we've had a lot of volatility in things like the Australian dollar, so it is quite clearly at a new recovery high. And then when we think about it in pounds, it's also has already broken out of a well-defined range and is now consolidating above the 200-day moving average. So as we look at all of these currencies, well, it's appreciating versus most of them. And this is true whether we're talking about developed markets, emerging markets, or commodity markets. So gold is appreciating because as we come out of the pandemic, every country wants to try and reanimate economic activity. The last thing they want to do is remove accommodation too early. Obviously, we have inflationary pressures, and that's pushing up interest rates in some countries. Well, Brazil, for example, has raised rates extremely aggressively, and that hasn't really resulted in a lot of strength, but at least it has helped to depress the clear advance in gold. So gold remains very range bound in Brazilian real, but then the interest rate differential there is huge relative to anywhere else. So we're seeing gold appreciate in the vast majority of currencies, and that's simply down to the limited supply argument. And of course, then there's the big question about what happens in terms of this brinksmanship around Ukraine between Russia and NATO. So gold in Russian rubles, and I'm not entirely sure why that didn't take. So it should, there we go. It should do better in terms of the outlook for gold in rubles. I don't personally think that there's a strong likelihood of a war. For one thing, there's too much talk about it. But there's a lot of brinksmanship going on, and from the Russian perspective, they're viewing it as their version of the Cuban Missile Crisis. They don't want to have NATO missiles in a large country with a long land border with Russia. The best possible scenario would be that the Ukraine go towards a Finnish type solution, but again, I don't think we're quite there yet. But gold is certainly appreciating as a safe haven as well, and oil prices also remain really quite firm. So we have a very clear backwardation. And the backwardation is wider now than it has been in a good long time. So when we look at the spread, for example, between various contracts, well, we're at new highs for a number of these contracts. And I think that this is certainly beginning to create some angst for traders, because if one were to start buying, well, prices have already gone up a lot, and certainly the trend remains consistent. But when we spread, for example, the 6 month and the 7 month, excuse me, the 1 month and the 7 month, then we're at new all-time highs. So this is a really quite exceptional advance here. And oil prices pushing back up towards $100 are very much a reflection of a recovering economy and a less than enthusiastic environment for the broad sector. So I found this interesting that, in fact, I was picking up my daughter from school before I started recording this broadcast, and oil prices were in positive territory at the time. So they've reversed that advance. We're starting to see some of this angst starting to come through finally. But it might also reflect some of the growth starting to moderate. Because when we think about inflationary pressures in China, they're certainly disappointing. And of course, that's reflecting lower growth expectations as well. So China's growth is moderating, and that's obviously a significant factor on oil prices. Even though we're at this extraordinary backwardation and producers aren't really enthusiastic about massively increasing supply, there's the real potential that demand might start to ebb. And of course, we're still in an environment where bond yields are really quite firm. So the 2 year paused in here today. The 10 year is still holding on to the majority of the advance. The result, of course, was that the yield curve spread has pushed back up above the 50 basis point level. It was up 5 basis points in here today. So I think what we're starting to see is that investors are beginning to price in the potential that growth isn't going to perform as well. Then when we go back and think about what happened with Nvidia and all of these companies that have been reporting lower guidance, it's implying that there's going to be less growth. That's an additional reason why gold is strong, because it's implying that governments aren't going to be in a position to greatly improve their fiscal condition, and in fact, they may have to start printing more money and spending more money they don't have in order to support growth, as we start to see the outlook for interest rates biting even before the major central banks raise them aggressively. We also saw in here today that the Bank of Japan has begun to intervene. So they're willing to print, and that continues to put upward pressure on the dollar versus the yen. And this continues to look like an uptrend overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.